Thank you for being here. I would notice we're already about 20 minutes behind schedule, but I may be able to fix that pretty quick because I'm not sure I have a half hour's worth of material. To some extent, it depends on you. This is meant to be discussion. And this talk will have, unlike the previous wonderful talk, this will have very little science. It's more of a progress report on something, on an activity that's going on. And although only my name appears in front, that's because there were so many co-authors, I didn't want to squeeze them all into one slide. So these are the co-authors of this effort, essentially. Now, we're all here for MRE. We know all about it. Basically, MRE is quantitative, non-invasive palpation. And MRE is growing, another reason we're all here. So MRE is increasing in clinical importance. It keeps growing in liver diagnosis and staging of liver fibrosis. It's becoming useful in tumor surgery planning. Many other areas are being researched by all of us. The research applications continue to increase as well. The number of MRE papers per year is increasing rapidly. So for example, if you look at the graphs there, you can see the exponential growth, both elastography in general and MRE in particular. Notice, by the way, that the scales are different by about a factor of 7. So we are only one part of elastography. And in fact, ultrasound elastography still dominates in terms of sheer number of papers. So we have some work to do. So things are wonderful. My God, the field is booming. But there's some issues. Many different types of acquisitions and processing techniques and so forth are in use. Many groups are reporting MRE results, but sometimes in terms of many different parameters. There's some confusion, particularly among clinicians, as to the meaning of certain terms, how to interpret certain types of MRE results. And these kinds of issues could negatively impact the further growth of MRE. So for example, MRE results have been reported in terms of shear modulus, sometimes real, sometimes complex, storage modulus, elasticity, magnitude of complex shear modulus, wave speed squared, shear stiffness, which is sometimes defined as one of the above, propagation. And when you start throwing in viscosity parameters, you get loss modulus, attenuation, loss tangent, loss factor, phase angle, and so forth. You can read all these. And this is not an exhaustive list. And in fact, everything I mentioned here applies to only an individual frequency. So we haven't even gotten to the papers that, to multi-frequency papers that relate these quantities to specific material models and report things such as spring plot parameters. And we haven't talked about anisotropic or pore elastic parameters, which are increasingly of interest. So it's a pretty confusing situation, even for us. What are clinicians going to make of this? I mean, I'm told that even the term shear modulus is a bit of a stretch for clinicians. How can we simplify their lives and make our literature more accessible to them? Or in fact, researchers from a related field that perhaps aren't familiar with some of these terms. So the MRE Guidelines Committee was set up a couple of years ago. The ISMRM MRE Study Group, which I hope most of you are members of, was proposed in late 2014 and approved by the ISMRM and first met at the 2015 annual meeting. And soon after its founding, the initial leaders of the study group set up an MRE Guidelines Committee, and the members of the committee are precisely the authors of this abstract. And among other things, this committee has set up a study group data repository, although I think data sets from Ingolf's group may be the only ones in there at the moment, a Facebook page set up by Arun, and arranged for a physical MRE phantom to be passed among various MRE labs, which has been happening for a while now. But in particular, one task that the Guidelines Committee identified was the drafting of a white paper meant to be as a service to the community to tackle some of the issues I mentioned above, and to some extent, try to standardize MRE technology, terminology, MRE practice. Where does this white paper stand? Well, what's the purpose of this white paper? Partly to explain MRE terminology to those not familiar with it, to recommend some practices and terms that we believe should be standardized, try to define good practices for the practitioners of MRE, and maybe recommend some practices and terms that we think should be discouraged or their use modified. Currently, a fairly detailed draft has been prepared and it's still circulating by the committee, but most of the recommendations we're going to make haven't really been finalized or voted on, and it's still an open process. Part of this talk is to appeal to you. What do you think should be in this paper? The intent is to try to submit this paper to MRM somewhere in the 3 to 6 month timescale, although that keeps slipping. And this is in no way a review paper. This is a paper that has these purposes mentioned here. And we want your input. As I said, what would be important for such a paper to do, such a paper to consider? What recommendations should such a paper make? What do you personally think might confuse clinicians or outsiders that could be clarified? What kinds of issues do you feel strongly about? I'm going to give a few examples of the kinds of things we're considering, but not by no means an exhaustive list. So for example, one of the simplest, almost trivial things we mention is, what about density? Technically, density is another unknown parameter at every voxel. And most MRE inversions don't really give you shear modulus, but shear modulus over density, for example. And however, except for the lung, almost all of us implicitly, or assume, almost sometimes just implicitly without even mentioning it, a tissue density of 1 gram per cubic centimeter. And it's the density of water, and it's pretty close to soft tissue. Actual tissue densities, of course, vary. And in fact, on average, they're probably closer to 1.05 grams per cubic centimeter. But we can't really tease this apart with MRE. It's hard to assess independently. Values vary in the literature. However, occasionally a paper is written, even in MRE, that doesn't use one. It uses 1.05 or something else. Sometimes a reviewer asks, why did you use one when such and such a value is closer to the real tissue? I've had this happen 2 or 3 times in my career. Cardiac MRI, to some extent, is standardized on 1.05 as a value. So what should we do? Well, again, almost all of us have been using one for the history of MRE. The committee at the moment has a pretty strong consensus saying, let's just do that. Let's actually standardize it. Let's actually say we recommend this as a standard for the field, except for the lung, of course. And then comparisons between papers remain easy. There's one less issue to worry about. And if a reviewer ever complains, you just say, hey, it's been standardized, or, you know, this has been recommended. This is an almost trivial issue. Let's move to a much more difficult issue, potentially controversial. The word stiffness. We all use the word stiffness loosely, and it makes intuitive sense to almost anyone, in particular to clinicians. But technically, it may not be quite the right word for what we measure. Stiffness is defined as force over displacement. It doesn't have units of pascals or kilopascals, it has units of newtons per meter. And it's a measure of the rigidity of an object. It depends on the physical dimensions of the object. Shear modulus is an intrinsic material property, but stiffness is not. Stiffness is a property of an object. And in fact, the concept of a map of stiffness, from this point of view, actually doesn't even really make sense. Stiffness is a single number for an object. Should we do something about this? Everybody uses the word stiffness. Well, it's probably too late. It's probably not even a good idea to change how we use the word stiffness. And again, I'm told by clinician colleagues, and oh, shear modulus, no, we don't know what that means. Stiffness, yeah, okay, we got that. Should we just ignore this issue and just keep doing whatever we're doing? Should we try to get really hardcore about it? Maybe a possible answer, and the committee has not come to a consensus, and your opinion is welcome, but maybe a possible answer is to say, well, let's keep using the word stiffness just in general. You know, introductory comments, summary statements, comparisons, this is stiffer than that. But whenever you actually report a result, whenever you actually put a number to it, use the correct term and use the correct units. So for instance, don't ever say stiffness is 4 kilopascals. Say shear modulus is 4 kilopascals or whatever. The previous talk, actually, I noticed, did a very good job of this. He was always saying this is stiffer than this, but all the graphs actually had shear modulus or Young's modulus or whatever. Anybody feel strongly about this one way or the other? Comments from the audience? Obviously, there'll be time for discussion later, but anybody have a burning desire to say anything at this point? Ingolf asked me to try to involve you. You would be, okay. Yes. Well, I personally, and some of what I'm saying is kind of committee and some is me personally in this talk. I personally consider shear modulus to be complex and you should probably use storage modulus if it's real, but that's my opinion. Yeah, Dieter. Sorry, can you repeat that again? No. Yes, right.
That's what I understand as stiffness.
As sheer stiffness, yeah.
Sheer stiffness. And when you define it like this, then it holds for both cases.
Yes.
For the elastic assumption and also for the viscoelastic assumption.
Right. And I think way back from the beginning when we were using LFE and we defined sheer stiffness as what you said, density times wave speed squared, and that's fine. except that unfortunately, a couple of years ago, some of our group redefined shear stiffness as magnitude of complex shear modulus, but that's another story. Density is still in there. So do you assume a value of one or not? But yeah. And that quantity, as you say, does not assume an elastic material. It simply says, here's the wave speed, I'm going to convert it to shear stiffness. Yeah, Curtis.
I'll just make a general comment that I agree with this statement. And I think there's commonly practiced to use stiffness in the general sense. In
right.
I think that would be my interpretation of how most people write papers in the first place.
Okay.
And that as whether or not stiffness as a technical term should be just deleted or not, but just defining what you're reporting. I think will encompass yes. everybody, right? Which is, how do you report complex? Do you report magnitude, but then leaving stiffness as a sort of general take-home message?
Okay, so you agree with this. And it may be that it's not really that much of a problem. Maybe most of us already do this, but although I think some papers don't. Arun? Yeah, and in fact, Bernard Van Beers is on the committee, and that was precisely his comment as clinician, that when I keep saying clinicians don't understand shear modulus, that was his claim.
Yes, I think there are two types of clinicians.
Okay.
You have the radiologists, and they have some basic understanding about this. And then you have the clinicians, meaning the gastroenterologists or whatever, and they do not understand, I think, what you're using the term of shear modulus.
Yeah. So Daka, are you here? Do you have a comment? Yeah, ultrasound people have often committed this sin. Although there is a paper from 2011 saying don't do this, you know, do this, don't call wave speed stiffness or shear modulus stiffness, but it persists. There was two comments. Yeah, Darren. There's a comment over here.
Yeah, sorry, you've already dealt with it. I was going to ask about what's the standard in the ultrasound community?
I would say wave speed is the most commonly reported quantity. I'm not sure I'm the best person to answer this, maybe Ingolf, but I think wave speed is probably the most commonly reported quantity, and then often shear modulus, but in the elastic assumption sense is used. Ingolf, do you have anything to add about ultrasound? Right.
As a standard parameter, and other inventors jumped on this train and use also the Young's modulus as a standard parameter. I think supersonic shear wave imaging uses the wave speed, the shear wave speed, and they call it stiffness. I mean, it's showing stiffness maps. But this is, I think, the important point here. The color bar should be then labeled shear wave speed in meter per second, for example. I mean, this is what we also applied over the last months or years now, this tomoelastography reporting in shear wave speed by MRE, and just to be more understandable for clinicians, we also call it stiffness. As we made the experience, even elasticity is sometimes too confusing for physicians. By stating a material to be more elastic is interpreted as being softer, as an elastic material responds better to a external deformation, something like this. So there's a lot of confusion among different communities, and therefore I consider this very important, this discussion and this guidelines paper. But I think we cannot come around stiffness. So stiffness is just intuitive, as you said. Everybody understands what means stiff and more stiff. And I think any parameter which reflects our haptic sensation by touching somebody, some tissue or whatever, can be called stiffness. However, as you said, when we come to numbers with units, we should clearly define what we mean with stiffness. And I don't see a principal problem with calling shear wave speed with stiffness, and in another paper, then we would use the term stiffness for the shear modulus, which is just approximately the square of the shear wave speed. So it's a totally different quantity, but intuitively graspable.
Okay, last question.
Mm-hmm. But if we have too blanket of a term for these sort of things, it's going to be hard to interpret differences in inverse problems.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll press on. This is a repeat slide, essentially, kind of pertinent to this comment. We reported all sorts of things, sometimes because the inversions give us different quantities. This is a confusing situation, especially for clinicians. Should we all decide to report So all of these quantities and more have been reported in the literature by us. Now, these are all convertible to each other, right? I mean, there's 15, 20 different parameters there, but there's really only two independent parameters describing the behavior of a shear wave in a viscoelastic isotropic material. And you can think of that as real and imaginary parts of shear modulus or whatever else you want from the parameters in the previous slide. However, you know, even though in principle you can, I'm not sure I know how to get out of this now. How do I go back to the view mode? Even though we can all convert between these, that's inconvenient. It increases the possibility of error. If you're trying to convert to previous results by, compare to previous results by a different group, and they report different quantities, then, you know, do each of us have to go reconvert things from different papers from different groups? Pretty inconvenient situation. However, different parameters may be more useful for a specific purpose. They may correlate better with a certain effect, a certain disease progression, or what have you. So what do we do? One possibility, I'll just throw this out there, is, well, keep using whatever parameters you want, especially if they correlate better with a certain thing you're chasing, like progression of disease. But maybe could you also always report storage and loss modulus as a separate table so that everybody can always just say, okay, this. Just a thought. The committee hasn't voted on this or anything, but this kind of thing is a possibility, you know, a standardized set of parameters, and then, oh, you can also use whatever else you want, you know, damping ratio, phase angle, whatever you want, but also have this there. This paper is going to include definitions for all the terms two slides back, all the relationships between these different quantities. For example, here's relationships between storage and loss modulus and alpha and beta attenuation of wave speed, and so forth. Going back to how we report results, this is a minor point, but is relevant to clinicians. Results at different frequencies aren't really directly comparable if we have viscoelastic materials. Clinicians sometimes have a hard time understanding this. And if we all just say, well, we found a shear modulus of this, you know, one group is working at 30 hertz, one group is working at 60 hertz, clinicians don't understand the subtlety that these numbers aren't necessarily directly comparable. So another thing we throw out there, when reporting results, how about if you always include the frequency? Now, of course, in any paper that passes review, you've mentioned the frequency, right? In the methods section, you say, I'm driving at 50 hertz or whatever. But maybe even in a results section, maybe even the table where you say shear modulus or whatever, you say shear modulus at 50 hertz. Maybe this will decrease the chance that some clinician will just compare results that shouldn't necessarily be directly compared. Or that it will say, oh, wait a second, this is at 50 hertz, this is 30 hertz, what's the, at least they'll think about it a little bit. A minor point, but perhaps something we should consider. Increasingly, groups are working at multiple frequencies, and perhaps another recommendation is, when you do this, go ahead, fit to material models, what have you, but if possible, can you also report the results at individual frequencies so we can all intercompare more easily? Sometimes this is readily possible, sometimes it's not, because you're using an inversion that tries to solve simultaneously for all the data at all the frequencies, but often it is possible. Good practices, what do we mean by that? Well, some of them are straightforward. Please always report all the details of the experiment and the processing, all the kernel sizes used in the processing, the filter sizes, the details of all the filters, blah, 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 everything you can think of. You should probably give some measure of the maximum or typical displacement amplitude, which often is not done. You should assess, either in the paper you're writing or by alluding to a previous paper with the same approach, the reproducibility of your numbers. You should assess and discuss sources of error. And what do I mean by that? Well, there's many, many sources of error in MRE, and this is not an exhaustive list. But I can think of estimation errors even when we have a pure shear wave. The inversion algorithm might be biased. Noise is present, and it corrupts and biases the results, usually towards lower stiffness values. The noise effects get worse and worse for stiffer objects or longer wavelengths, or lower SNR, obviously. There's discretization. This biases our results for all of us. Typically, you underestimate derivatives, so you overestimate stiffness with discretization. Separate from this, there's estimation errors due to not having a pure shear wave, to the longitudinal wave not being completely rejected. Typically, this would bias you towards higher values. There's estimation errors due to anisotropic effects, because shear waves in anisotropic materials have different speeds in different directions. Aaron has shown this very nicely. Poor elastic effects are increasingly being considered. What if you're using a non-poor elastic inversion and a poor elastic material? Can you at least think about the implications a little bit? Estimation errors due to waveguide effects, biasing algorithms that don't explicitly account for them. Estimation errors due to heterogeneities or boundaries, biasing algorithms that don't explicitly account for these. For example, simple algorithms in direct inversion would have a problem whenever the, assumes local homogeneity, would have a problem whenever the processing kernel crosses a boundary, as we all know. And then perhaps one other concept is things we need as a field in MRE. So for example, we need an SNR measure that tells us when the data is good enough, when we can trust the numbers. Matt McGarry proposed OSS-SNR, which I think is a great advance, and it's claimed that OSS-SNR achieves this in a global sense for nonlinear inversion. I'm not sure, but perhaps I can speak to this, how well this holds up in a regional sense, or when you get deep down into structure and attenuation has really hit your SNR. We can use OSS-SNR to characterize other algorithms, but it depends on the algorithm, and it depends on the processing parameters used in the algorithm. And OSS-SNR is fundamentally not the right measure for direct inversion type algorithms that take second derivatives of data. Also, if you take the curl, you really need OSS-SNR after the curl, or you need to account for that in some way. OSS-SNR is a very good measure for comparisons, such as between different drivers at the same frequency for the same object and so forth, as well as possibly for some inversion techniques. So perhaps we're partway there of an SNR measure. Kind of related to this, it would be wonderful if all our inversions could give quantitative confidence measures that actually assess the coefficient of variation of a voxel or give confidence intervals for results at a voxel. And occasionally this has been done, but in general it has not been done. And even this only assesses the effect of noise, not all the other biases from the effects mentioned before. Perhaps a minor point, but most of us have to do phase unwrapping and so forth. Could we have an automated measure that tells us when phase unwrapping failed, rather than just, you know, we look at the data and said, oh, we it worked or it didn't, but could this be automated? This is not exhausted. There's probably a lot of other things we need as a field. So last slide is, for the things I mentioned and many, many things I have not mentioned, we want your input. There's already been some good discussion. What other things do you think are important for such a paper to do, such a paper to consider? What recommendations do you think should be made? What do you, these are the things I said before. What do you personally think might confuse clinicians or outsiders? What do you feel strongly about? Contact any of us on the committee. That my email is there, but anybody else as well, with any other suggestions, questions, anything whatsoever. And if there's any further discussion, we have another 5 minutes. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you. I have a question in terms of the dialogue with clinicians. And so the point about what you call the parameters of interest, but two questions. One is about expectation. The signal to noise is one measure, but what about if the clinician asks, are the waves any good in this experiment? Have we been able to put good waves into the tissue of interest? And secondly, the expectation around there being a second parameter in terms of viscosity, that it's exciting that's potentially there, but anticipating what that second parameter might be and what it means, I think is important.
So let me respond first to both of those. First of all, in my mind, a good SNR measure would take into account, are the waves really there?
But is there a way that the clinician can see that? Can see that the waves are good?
Certainly they can visually look at it, but you mean numerically report a quantity?
But in terms of it being on an MRI scanner, when the data are being acquired, will one day the clinician be able to appreciate that the actuation is good in a way that the waves are in the organ, and that might be a consideration?
That would certainly be a good thing to have immediate feedback. I mean, in general, in our group, you look at it and you say it looks like good waves, but having a measure right then and there,
so they can see what adjustments might improve that. What they could do to improve the waves, whether they've got good enough waves to stop the examination because they've got the data they need.
With respect to your second point, I would say that second parameter, i.e. some sort of viscosity quantity, I think has already been proven to probably be useful for liver inflammation, for example. I don't know if there is a single second parameter. I think for different situations, different second parameters might be more useful. I'm sometimes told that two numbers is a little too much for clinicians. I hate to put down clinicians, but I mean, Dick Eman has really always maintained one number, please, one number. And so it may be a bit of a stretch even to go to a second quantity. I hope that's not the case, but Curtis?
So a comment or a question about the listing sources of error, which everything you had in your list I agree with completely. I also don't think any of those are going to be crossed off the list anytime soon, maybe directly affected. So do you envision this more as like a disclaimer attached at the end of every paper saying, use these numbers with caution? Let's say this, I think that this is probably has two answers depending on if it's a scientific audience or if it's a clinical audience. And the clinical audience is, I'm not entirely sure how you guys scientific, you maybe tailor that based on what you're trying to address specifically in your paper.
Yeah.
But from a clinical standpoint, how would you envision this sort of, I think that's gonna be true of every MRE method for at least the foreseeable future, that they're going to have all of those biases.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've kind of mixed together, you know, I'm saying papers should do this, and there's researchy papers, and there's clinical papers, and everything in between, and perhaps different standards should apply. I think there is a bit of a trend, I guess I'll say among clinicians, I wasn't insulting somebody, but among people that aren't real practitioners of MRE to just believe the numbers, you know, whereas I hardly believe any number. So that's a little bit scary. I mean, it seems a little silly when you say they have blanket disclaimer at the end of every paper, but that seems a little too much. But I think at least in some situations, you ought to at least consider, you know, what might be, in your case, might be how bad the sources of error might be, some discussion along those lines, I think, is appropriate. I'm not sure if I answered your question, but.
It's possible if that's tied directly towards some technical advance that, you know, there's always grains of salt that we need to consider.
Yeah.
So I have two comments. Of course, I'm on the committee, and of course, you get my input regularly. But one thing, I actually know some clinicians. They use two numbers all the time, in fact, in a couple of situations. And I think it may be instructive to think of places that clinicians use numbers. So one is, of course, blood pressure. You know, and most of us know our blood pressure, you know, 120 over 80, 140 over 90, two numbers.
Okay. So they can handle that. Okay,
right.
Good to know.
So. And also cholesterol. I mean, there's the good cholesterol,
three,
the bad
three
cholesterol,
numbers.
Right? Or, you know, so if you're, so I don't know, I actually forget, what are the units of blood pressure, millimeters of mercury?
Millimeters of mercury, yeah.
Right, so units are probably not the most critical. The other thing I'd also remember, your blood pressure, you take it twice, it's gonna be, you know, different by plus or minus five. So clinicians will interpret that with sort of intrinsic error bars. And I think the other comment, besides that two measurements are okay and you know, we should be scientifically correct so that someone who's taken first year physics won't discount anything we say because we're saying stiffness and using newtons per millimeter squared or newtons per meter squared. So I think we should be scientifically correct. I think we should acknowledge general usage, stiffness is good. But I also, I think those things are the critical parameters. So anyway, those are my input as a committee member.
Great, thanks.
I'm just a little confused about the confusion between stiffness and newtons per meter squared. I mean, the Hooke's tensor to me, those like the C values. To my understanding, the stiffness, the way I was taught, was that the C values in the Hooke's tensor are newtons per meter squared. And I have understood that these are stiffnesses.
There is a thing called a stiffness matrix in mechanical engineering, and they use the word stiffness for those kind of quantities, my understanding.
So what's...
Nonetheless, if you go to Wikipedia and look up stiffness, which I did yesterday, you get exactly what I said. It's an object, and how much does it deform when force is applied? The units are newtons per meter. And it's a property of the object.
We're
I mean, something can have the same material property, and depending on its shape, it'll bend more or bend less.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So different uses of stiffness
even
there.
I understand now. I understand the confusion.
Okay, so does that mean you're less confused now? Or?
Well, I understand the need to clarify the units with what you're using.
Okay, Arvin? Yeah.
Young's modulus a lot.
As Ingolf said, you're right. They tend to use Young's modulus. I should have remembered that. And the fact that it's basically a factor of three different for soft tissues is often not understood or appreciated by outsiders.
Maybe tomorrow we hear the keynote lecture from Paul Chenmei, who will tell us that this number three between shear modulus and Young's modulus is not applicable to soft biological tissue. So we can also not rely anymore on this number to make the confusion bigger.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Armando. Very important work, very important step towards unified terminology in MRE. I just have one question. How do you do it actually in the Mayo MRE setup? I mean, you provide a grid, a mask of reliable and non-reliable numbers in the in the modulus map, right?
Right.
So, and is this crit based on the SNR measure, or is it based on inversion artifacts? What is actually behind that?
Yeah. So the MR, the inversion that's used in the commercial liver product comes out of Mayo, and it provides a confidence map, a sort of grid of places where you shouldn't trust it. And it's based actually on, at one point when you're calculating derivatives, the data is fit with a polynomial model, and it's based on the residuals from that model. And then there's a separate calculation involving, at the end of everything, you do a giant SVD to get the results, you know, a single shear modulus out of different sensitization directions and different direction filtered versions of the data, and the residuals in that SVD are also used.
Maybe this could also be a strategy for other inversion methods. Maybe you can explain it in this terminology paper.
Sorry, I did want to add one thing. Nonetheless, the number that comes out, you know, the confidence measure comes out and says 95% confidence, is a totally arbitrary number. And the threshold that's used for saying this is reliable and this is unreliable is a totally arbitrary number. It's not like actual confidence intervals on shear moduli or anything like that.
Thank you.